You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
I don't think anyone should think this is a license to continue to breach copyright. INET is not responsible for stopping it.
There's no real demand for censorship of the internet in Australia. There's no other country in the Western world, at least, that's trying anything like this.
Netflix aren't better at anything, but we think we've got something, and we call it the iPad.
And today, we're delighted to be present at the creation of digital radio in Australia.
Senator Conroy is completely botching the implementation of this filtering policy of his.
For adults who want to be able to watch the other material, we're not proposing to do that.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello everybody, I'm Andrew McCollum, and welcome to this week's edition of Tech Talk Radio. Everybody knows about social networking, the young, the old, the Luddites and the Boffins. Even businesses large and small have found their way to social networking sites such as Twitter and Facebook. But in these days of technological revolution, where each day brings new and exciting things to our desktop, laptop, netbook and iGadgets, it's clear that some businesses are embracing social networking for all the wrong reasons. In a survey by US PR and marketing agency Wildfire, which analysed the social media activity of the 2009 Deloitte Fast Tech 50, found that 90% of the UK tech companies featured had a presence on two or more social networks, but the majority failed to actually use social media in a social way. Instead, far too many brands are treating the likes of Twitter and Facebook as traditional marketing channels. While many companies in Australia now have Twitter and Facebook accounts, such as telcos, media agencies, government departments, and even religious groups, the question needs to be asked, what are they actually doing with their accounts? Social networking, by definition, requires users to be sociable, that is, interact with other network users where some organisations do and don't. In the UK, 74% of companies operated an official Twitter account. 43% of brands had never replied to a single tweet. Overall, the study found that 57% used Twitter solely for one-way marketing activities, and the use of Facebook didn't fare any better either. The survey found that 20% of those on the Deloitte Fast Tech 50 list had a presence on the social networking site. A paltry 25% of brands replied to followers' comments on their Facebook accounts, while 60% of companies with a Facebook page use it purely as a distribution channel. For some reason, the experience of poor social media execution by companies on Twitter goes along the lines of something like this. A tweet is sent to a company or organisation requesting help, or maybe a complaint. If you're lucky, you may get a reply offering help, but most likely encouraging you to contact the company concerned via traditional methods. Further tweets tend to fall on deaf ears. One exception to this, in recent times, has been Telstra of all companies, but their foray into the Twitterverse was less than credible, as those who choose to communicate with the telco via Twitter had a bot-like response within a short moment. Tech Talk Radio's Lydia Davis was quick to point this out to the telco, which in turn made itself more sociable. As some social network critics have said, the bottom line is that for all the social media marketing hype, the reality is a tad skewed. Music no doubt to the ears of opportunistic social media marketers everywhere who would be very keen to help. Companies, tech or otherwise, would do well to remember that in the age of social media, customer service is PR.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
The federal election inches closer and closer, and we take a look at how the major parties view Conroy's internet filter. Adam takes a look at the demise of Google's Wave, which has become a dumper. Android's growth is beyond expectations. Victoria to trial electric cars. And the AFACT versus INET appeal nears an end. First up, though, here's Dr. Ron with the latest from the Tech Talk News Desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, the Coalition says it will block proposed netfilter legislation, now described as dead in the water. Microsoft releases a final preview build of Internet Explorer 9. Google abandons its much-hyped collaboration platform, Google Wave. Optus broadband customers can now enjoy increased cable speeds up to 80 megabits per second. And the FBI takes on Wikipedia. Welcome to Tech Talk News. The Coalition says it will block any attempt by a future Labor government to introduce net filter legislation into Parliament. The opposition Treasury spokesman, Mr. Joe Hockey, said on Thursday last week that the Coalition believed the internet filter would not work and described it as flawed policy, and that the Coalition would instead stick to the plan of giving parents more control. Mr. Hockey also said the ISP filter-based system does not work, therefore it creates an assumption of trust that cannot be met by the technology. Chairman of Electronics Frontiers Australia, Mr. Colin Jacobs, welcomed the announcement. The EFA has been a long-standing opponent of the government's proposed net filter, and Mr. Jacobs said the announcement means that Labor's legislation is effectively dead on arrival in the Senate. Green Senator Mr. Scott Ludlam said the Coalition's announcement is excellent news and added that the Liberal Party should be congratulated for finally declaring their hand. Mr. Ludlam said the ALP should drop the censorship proposal rather than fighting what now looks inevitable. Minister for Communications, Senator Stephen Conroy, did not respond directly to Mr. Hockey's announcement. The latest incarnation of the proposed net filter was supposed to stop web traffic at the ISP level, which contained refused classification or RC material. Senator Conroy recently announced a review of the RC category under the National Classification Scheme and said that the net filter was being put on hold for at least 12 months until the review of the RC classification had been completed. To other news this week, Microsoft has released the final preview build of its Internet Explorer 9 web browser prior to beta release. Microsoft says Internet Explorer 9 is a faster, more standards-compliant web browser and is currently at the platform preview stage for developers. A key feature of IE9 platform preview is fully hardware-accelerated HTML5 for text, graphics, audio and video. IE9 also incorporates modern, scalable vector graphics, or SVG, used in the delivery of animated as well as static images. SVG is a way of drawing two-dimensional vector graphics and is an easy and powerful way to add images to a website with minimal markup and low bandwidth. Other performance gains in IE9 are achieved by the integration of a new JavaScript engine with the rest of the browser, as well as new CSS3 features, new Document Object Model or DOM enhancements and features, as well as better support for developers. Developers can find additional information about the latest build of Internet Explorer 9 at msdn.microsoft.com. Google has abandoned its foray into online real-time collaboration. Development of the much-hyped Google Wave has been halted, although Google says it will maintain support for developers at least until the end of 2010. Google's idea was simple enough. If email was invented today, what would it look like? Wave used an inbox-type interface resembling a mixture of the Gmail web-based email service and Google Docs and Google Spreadsheets. Each message thread, called a Wave, could include text, links, photos and videos, and participants could see others typing or drawing in real time. Google launched the product with an interface for developers to build extra functionality in the hope that Wave's underlying communications engine would be used in third-party products. In a blog post last week, Google said that Wave simply wasn't being used widely enough for the company to persevere with the project. Optus customers will enjoy the benefits of a recent upgrade to the company's hybrid fibre coaxial or HFC cable network in Brisbane, Melbourne and Sydney. According to the telco, residents in supported areas will now have access to speeds of up to 80 megabits per second using the improved DOCSIS 3 standard. General Manager of Fixed Network Strategy, Mr. Michael Wagg, said that Optus had tested around 6,000 customer connections and had come up with an average of just under 75 megabits per second download speed, and said that in general, download speeds will represent a fourfold improvement on previous access. Mr. Wagg said that the new speeds would be available to more than 1.4 million homes in the three cities, and that current Optus customers would need to upgrade their cable modem to a new model to take advantage of the improved speeds. Customers would also pay a premium to access the faster network. Mr. Wagg said the $25 million upgrade involved the deployment of new Cisco hardware in the Optus network, and that new end-user modems will also be supplied by Cisco. And the United States Federal Bureau of Investigation appears to have taken umbrage with the use of its seal and an article on its operations in the popular online knowledge base Wikipedia. The FBI has written a letter to Wikipedia's owner, the Wikimedia Foundation, demanding that it take down an image of the FBI seal accompanying an article on the Bureau and threatening legal action. The Wikimedia Foundation says that the FBI is citing law which is largely about keeping people from using fake identification badges or profiting from the use of the seal. Wikimedia has publicly, politely replied to the FBI, saying it has no intention of removing the image or the article, and that if necessary, the Wikimedia Foundation is prepared to argue its view in court. Legal analysts have described the FBI's demand as both silly and troubling, and suggested that the FBI probably has better things to do with its time. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
The iPhone didn't happen in New Zealand, but it happened over here.
Where's JD? Is he giving us the big A?
Yeah, exactly.
Congratulations to Warlock in our chat room. He's now an official Apple-approved iPhone developer.
He's had the little chip put in the back of his neck.
And that's disgraceful.
Have they fixed the bug in it yet?
It's got a display problem with the signal strength bars.
You're holding it wrong. Do we know where this TARDIS lives?
But you get the government you deserve, and right now, you don't deserve anything better.
He's come out and definitively said that the coalition would completely scrap the $43 billion NBN.
Otherwise, the only thing we can do is dig up Western Australia and sell it to China.
What do they get fined? $20 million.
Depending on what sort of phone you've got, you're going to have to choose which brand of plane you're flying.
Yeah, it was in 3D, but they didn't go overboard in it.
Hello, you're breaking up. Hello.
I'm on a plane.
Can you hear me?
I'm on a plane.
Hello.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Wasn't it good having Adam Turner in last week, boys? I thought it was great. Sorry, I was just reminiscing there in the...
I like his collection of smartphones, his menagerie that he had here on the bench.
He did.
It was very exciting.
He did. I even reminisced with that today on Twitter. Hello, everybody. I'm Andrew McComb. That was Dr. Ron you just heard. And Graham, the three of us that are in for Tech Talk Radio this evening. You can come along and have a say on chat.techtalkradio.com.au. The boys are there at the moment. There's a full contingency heading to the chat room, which is good. It's been an interesting week this week. The broadband filters looks like it's had another nail in its coffin. Did you see that?
The broadband filter, yes, it does look like it's got another nail in its coffin. But I've got to say, at the start of the program here, I'm quite troubled at the moment.
Just really? Dr.
Ron? What's troubling you?
Can I have your Medicare card,
yeah,
first,
just
please?
Pursuant to a conversation I had with Graham about 10 minutes ago, who's offered me an alternative explanation for the ending of the movie...
Oh, yes. Let's just bring everybody up to speed if you haven't.
The movie Inception, which I saw during the week.
Yes. Yes, I've seen it, and Graham has seen it. So everyone's seen it now. So if you haven't seen it, look away now.
No, let's not discuss it, because there's probably people who haven't seen it yet who want to.
Suffice to say, go and see it.
Go and see it, yeah.
And make sure you don't have to do any loo stops in the cinema, because you miss a line and you're Christmas. Sorry.
Yeah, that's right.
Out down for the count there, so.
Yeah, get yourself settled and, yeah, switch on. It's a great movie. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think it's the best sort of thinking movie I've seen, like sci-fi thinking movie since the first Matrix. Which was,
it was a bit like that, wasn't
it? Yeah, it was very entertaining.
It was also interesting to try and decipher what was CGI and what was real in some of the effects, because it was... Anyway, we shouldn't go there. Sorry, we won't spoil it for anyone who's listening.
I'll give you a clue. The stuff where the buildings were folding into each other was probably CGI.
Yeah, that's pretty safe to say, isn't it?
What, that wasn't done on a soundstage or something?
But my question is, and this is where speculation is rife, there's a very end shot of the film, and you got to ask yourself the question, did it fall over? And that's causing great deal of consternation in the studio tonight, and has with a lot of other people.
Well, as I said, Graham,
No spoilers.
Graham just offered an alternative explanation. I'm thinking about that now. I'm thinking, oh yeah, maybe that's something that I hadn't considered. Yes. Oh, well, go and see it if you haven't seen it.
It was interesting. It's funny, we're talking about it a bit. I was very fortunate enough to be on ABC Radio today, and I was on with the movie reviewer, would you believe, whose name eludes me at the moment, I'm sorry. But we were talking about movies in 3D and stuff like that on Carol's show. And, yeah, we were talking a lot about 3D, but Inception came up in the discussion. And apparently, Chris, who was the director of that film, was asked and pressured a lot to put it in 3D, but he chose not to. He didn't like the 3D, what 3D
does to
films.
That's interesting, isn't it? Yeah.
But J.J. Abrams, the director of Star Trek, is also of the same. He didn't want to do his in 3D. So, yeah, it was quite interesting. And then we were discussing where 3D was going to go, or where it was going to end up, and whether it was a flash in the pan in the cinema.
It sort of has come and gone before as a bit of a fad.
Yeah, this
but this time it's come with a much better technology behind it.
And this is what David Stratton was saying too, who's the movie reviewer on ABC's The Movie Show. And we were sort of chin-wagging, as you do on the radio, taking a few talkback callers. And that's why we don't do it on this show. And, yeah, it was interesting discussion. But at the end of the day, I think you'll end up seeing 3D stuff in the big screen for some time to come. But it's really going to make its foray into the gaming arena in the home small screen market. That's where it'll end up.
It is interesting looking at the films coming up, the number of films that are in 3D coming up, you know, going to be released shortly. And I'm not sure whether it's the sort of thing where, okay, I've got a sort of a film that's, yeah, it's going to kind of do all right, but it's not a blockbuster. Oh, we'll make it 3D. That might bring people in. Do you think there's a lot of that goes on?
Probably. Mm. Well, you look at what I think Avatar did to Rupert Murdoch's bottom line. He's very happy. And that was a 3D film.
It was a 3D film, but it wasn't the type of 3D film that was 3D in order to boost it from being an average film to being something that people go and see.
Yeah, but I don't think, as we've just discussed, I don't think
it would have been just as big a film if it had been done in 2D without 3D.
One of the interesting things we were discussing, I don't mean to digress too much, but sound came up as part of our discussion today too. And
sound is interesting. Sound is a much bigger part of the movie experience than most people think.
Much more important than 3D.
Yes.
You get a good sound mix. Like, you go and have a listen to Avatar, whew, that's a very interesting mix, you know? So, and that was more important than the 3D.
I find it very disappointing if you go to the cinema and the sound isn't up to scratch. That's very disappointing.
And not all cinemas are the same.
No.
You've got to find your favourite cinemas. Now, I must admit from...
In fact, not every cinema within the same complex is the same.
Well, no, that's true.
So, yeah, Cinema 1 might be really good, but Cinema 7 might be pretty shocking.
I do like the IMAX cinema in Carlton, though. That sound is amazing.
You mentioned Avatar
the
before.
That was very good.
Avatar was released in 3D,
yeah.
Yes.
And that was at IMAX.
It was.
Now, Inception isn't in 3D, as you said, but that's available to be seen at IMAX.
Yeah.
And
but see, that's the experience of going to the cinema these days.
Mm.
Big screen, big sound. You immerse yourself all around you. You know? And it's like the glasses. You look at the glasses that you wear in the normal cinema these days, like at IMAX, and they're the big
3D glasses.
They're
yeah.
the Elton John ones, right?
Mm.
So you're not, your vision is not impaired. Whereas if
you
go into the local
village...
I'm not sure
this is the best use of IMAX, although it is very impressive to see a big film at IMAX. A film like... Inception or Avatar, any of those, they're not primarily filmed with IMAX in mind. They're filmed with a normal cinema in mind. And you show them in IMAX, and yeah, it's really big. And but, you know, if you were filming that for IMAX, you'd have the action more concentrated in the centre of the screen, and you'd have a lot more of the screen filled up with just the background. Because that's the idea of IMAX, is that it's
designed to be like an immersive experience.
That's
where
right.
Your peripheral vision is
the movie as well. Mm. Yeah, that's right. Whereas when you look at something that's filmed for a normal cinema in IMAX, it's just that, yeah, I look over there and there's that person, and I look over there and there's the other person. Do you know what I mean? Is that you don't have, yes, I'm looking at these two people and I can see this background towards the edge of my vision.
The bottom line from my point of view is nothing beats a good script. You know, take Inception, take The Hurt Locker, take those sort of Star Trek films. Great story. Well worth it.
Doesn't matter
what size
what
the
technology
is,
good how good or bad the presentation is. You need a good script. Mm. And a good script can trump all of those things.
Indeed. You are listening to Tech Talk Radio. We've digressed already.
Yes. Tech Talk and film criticism. Yes.
Exactly. But no, I think it's relevant because everybody goes to the films these days. And go and pick your favourite cinema too.
Mm.
One of the guys, Robbie Breck, who's over at the ABC as well, he sort of said, oh, in their local paper, they were saying that it was costing $120-odd for a family of four to go to the movies. You know, just a 3D movie, and that's what started all this discussion
today.
Yeah,
that's because the popcorn costs $50 on
its
own.
That's exactly right. I said, stop eating the popcorn, and you'll find it'll be so much cheaper. Anyway, Dr. Ron, you have some correspondence over there.
I have correspondence, yes, I do. GD, who's our moderator, he sends his apologies tonight. He's not in the chat room.
Are we unmoderated? That's a bit scary.
We are. We're refused
Shields
classification.
Down.
Hang on a minute.
Unmoderated.
Quick, get Senator Conroy to log in. Someone do that, please.
GD said, we'll have 15 Senator Conroys there now. chat.techtalkradio.com.au is where we all are at the moment. If you're not listening live, if you're listening on the pod, then that's okay too. Go to forum.techtalkradio.com.au.
I think we should go to
any
the northern
great community stations around the country that have been on the podcast. Yeah.
Truckloads of them.
Oh, absolutely. Mm. We should go to the Northern Territory and do a show from up there at Catherine, because warmer.
Yeah. Considerably warmer.
I like the cold.
GD was moving. Do you remember he was moving house?
I thought he was moving broadband provider. He
Both.
Couldn't care about the house. The
Both. GD says, I've settled into the People's Republic of Brunswick, but internode.
There's lots of communist banks in that particular area
that's
too.
That's a bit harsh.
I'm just reading the correspondence, Graham, but Internode won't come to the party until the 24th of August.
For his NBN.
For his NBN connection. Can't moderate till then. I'm sending this from work, says GD. Well, GD, we're glad you've moved and the move's gone successfully, but sorry to hear that you're going to be off the radar for another couple of weeks at least.
Be very interested to know how you go when you do get connected, though. That'll be... One will be very keen to hear.
Send photos so we can put it up on the chat, because that'd be interesting seeing the terminations and how they do it all. Whether it's just the boring old bit of copper that comes in, the last little bit's just
and
the
make,
old copper.
And make sure you stick your speedtest.net results up on the forum.
Absolutely.
Yes, and if the libs get in, it might be a very short-lived experience, GD.
Yes.
So
give it Tony Abbott will come around and rip it all out.
Give it plenty of stick while it's still hooked up. GJMCN says, regarding ABC 24, the fantastic high-definition news channel...
The incredibly stupid Channel 2 decision to put the news channel on HD.
They said the HD channel will be back in about 2 or 3 or 5 or 7 years' time.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah.
That's good. The wise old owl approach to news coverage. Please, God, says GJMCN, make them shut up. And he's got shut up with capital letters. Adam Turner's view from the couch got part of the problem, the HD and the collaterally damaged content, but not all of it. The trouble with the promise of 24-hour news is that they have to fill it. And there is a very real danger... says GJ, of insufficient newsiness.
Senator
stuff
Conroy's
available,
just joined the chat. I just thought I'd announce.
And that they will have to use spec filler. I thought that was a good comment.
That
is a very real danger. If you've got a 24-hour news channel, you need content to fill it, and you do start to scrape the barrel. I mean, they scrape the barrel on a half-hour news segment every night, don't they, sometimes? And you go, oh, it's a slow news day. We're hearing... touchy-feely and stories about things, but then you've got a 24-hour news channel. What do you fill it with?
Repetition. That's what you fill it with. And I think that's the point. But having said that,
And the reason that's not a problem to fill it with repetition is because people dip in and out of it, the same as they do with news radio on the radio, which is 24-hour news radio station that the ABC run. I don't know whether a lot of people know it's there, but it's
1026 in Melbourne.
1026 in Melbourne, various places all over the country. But yeah, you dip in and out of it. So yeah, sure, they repeat the same stuff, but you can switch over, watch for 10 minutes, get the latest news. The other thing that they do on news radio, and I hope they do this on the television as well, is that they provide news from other places in the world. So they play All Things Considered from National Public Radio in the US, which is a fantastic show. They play stuff from Radio Deutsche Welle in Germany. They play stuff from Radio Netherlands. They play a lot of stuff from the BBC. And it's quite fascinating sometimes to get the news stories that you hear from the different perspectives from the different parts of the world.
Very good. Sorry, I was just reading Dr. Ron Hugg, Senator Conroy, in the chat. What's going on there, Dr. Ron?
Senator Conroy's joined the chat, and he says that he needs a hug. Everyone's always mean to him.
Dear, I hope you've got a job in 3 weeks' time, Senator. It'd be interesting to see what happens. Anyway, hey, by the way, I got polled on the weekend. Have you ever been polled?
What, someone hit you with a stick?
Yeah, Morgan.
Oh, really?
They came and knocked on my door and said, who are you going to vote for? I said, don't know. Thank you, Graham Foley, editor extraordinaire over there. Until you get people coming through that wall there, isn't it? But no, I got polled. I've often thought they were fictitious people, these Morgan Gallup polls, but no.
You're one of those numbers.
Little man came to the door and said, hi, I'm Mr. Morgan. Can I poll you? And I said, yeah, sure. And then he proceeded to ask me several questions which were completely unrelated to politics. So they get you in strange places. But nonetheless, I got polled. So there you go. When you hear the Morgan stuff, oh,
there was a very good piece many, many years ago in Yes Minister where Sir Humphrey demonstrated how you can get people to answer the way you want in a poll by constructing all the questions leading up to the important question.
Yeah, that'd be very true. Yes. One of the other things with the poll too is that
it'd never happen.
They hold this piece of paper up to you and said, who are you going to vote for? Can you tell me the number on this piece of paper? And they go, it's not the number there. So they're already trying to sort of get you to answer one or two, when you're going to vote for three and there's no three on the piece of paper. Very hard like that. But anyway, I just thought I'd throw that in. It was good.
The other interesting thing that we've got to be very careful of, and that you might, you know, it's well worth having an understanding of the way mathematics works, the way statistics work. You see the, these polls published in the newspapers, and they make a big deal out of a difference. They've gone up 2% from what they were a week ago or something like that. But then you look at the sample size and the statistical error, and you realise that it's gone up 2%, but the answer really is within a range of plus or minus 8%. So, you know, the two polls that where there seems to be a change of 2% really are exactly the same answer.
There was a result that was released during the week, I think, where there was a... I can't remember what the statistic was, but it was a massive change, like 8% or 10% or something. And everybody was saying, yeah, well, that's because it's a stupid poll. Like you were saying, it's a stupid...
Yeah, it might have an error factor of 15%. You just don't know.
Yeah,
you've got to look a little bit deeper than the headline to find out.
To find out what it really means.
Mm. There's only one poll that counts, and it's about 3 weeks away. We have a phone number, and it's attached to a feedback line, which we're giving it another shot. We had it for a while, and then we turned it off because email and chat rooms and things like that came along. The number is 03-8682... 8836.
And if you're listening outside of Australia, plus 613-8682-8836.
Now, last week on the show, as you said earlier on this evening, Dr. Ron, we had Adam Turner in, and he brought in a cacophony of mobile phones that chatted aimlessly through digitalness through the show. You probably heard it if you're listening to the podcast and go, well, who would turn those phones off?
We took a couple of tweet pics and I sent him a text message while we were on air and I said, which one's going to beep, I think was the message.
Yeah.
And we're sitting here watching and one of them lit up.
Oh, yeah, chatting away.
Yeah, SIM card in one of them.
Absolutely. Anyway, Adam brought these phones in. It was really interesting and we got a lot of people talking about them. Now, Mark Diggins, do you remember Mark?
Yes, he's one of our European... No, he's not. He's an American correspondent.
Used to be on the panel a long time ago. And he went to America to build their phone network to some sort of quality like we're used to here.
Well, the reason why I'm telling you about the chat line is he rang up and he shared his thoughts about his device.
G'day, Tech Talk panellists. It's Mark Diggins here. Just on my way home from work listening to the last week's podcast. Just thought I'd ring and let you know that my Nexus One I got from Google Direct and don't have any of that extra Telstra stuff that stuffs things up for you. From a battery life point of view, I get a day out of it most days. I do have a spare battery I bought and can drop that in at any time, but I'd probably only use it once a month on really busy days. So quite happy with it, running Froyo 2.2, and still enjoy listening to the show and hope to be back on one time. Cheers for now. Bye.
There you go. There was Mark.
Ah, fantastic, Mark. Thanks for ringing in. That's great.
Yeah, so come on,
you
boys.
Good to hear his voice on the radio again.
It is. Yeah, anyone can ring up and tell us their thoughts on their particular device. Mm. Whether you've bought a new iPhone. Warlock, have you bought a new iPhone? You can ring up and tell us about the death grip. Have you done it? See what it's like. But anyway, yeah, thanks, Mark. That was good. Nice to hear his voice on the radio.
It's good to hear his voice. He's going well over there in the US. I'm not sure if or when he'll be coming back. But
The visa will expire one day soon. They'll deport him.
He must be having fun, though. He doesn't seem to be coming home.
Oh, look, it happened to Lydia. She did the same thing. Went for a couple of years and still there. Bought a house now in Middleton.
There you go.
Yeah, anyway, Palo Alto. Dr. Ron, sorry, any more Coro there tonight?
No, that's all the correspondence. And if you'd like to communicate with us during the week, you can send an email to feedback@techtalkradio.com.au. You can leave us a message on the forum, even.
Yeah, and don't be afraid. We've got an election coming up. Come and, you know, vent if you need to. Talk to us about the NBN. Mm. Tell us your woes and we'll put them on air. But make sure that they're airable. That's why we don't talk back.
Now, all these numbers and addresses and different websites and so on, the easy way to find any of them is they're all listed on the main website, www.techtalkradio.com.au, and that's the place to go. That's
we've got a main website as well, don't we? Yeah.
That's the main website.
We always forget that one.
Yes. But that's the one where you can go to find all the others. If you can't remember where the forum is, just go to the techtalkradio.com.au website, link to the forum. Find the feedback number, find the address.
There's links there to our Twitter pages and our Facebook pages, and there's all sorts of stuff. Links.
Don't
there
bother
to our...
going to my Twitter page. Not much there.
You're a Twitter user, but you don't tweet.
I'm a Twitter consumer.
Yes, you are.
Are you a twit or a Twitterer?
He's an observer. He sits on the side and watches what goes
past. Nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong at all.
No, nothing wrong with that whatsoever.
I had to look at Facebook today. There was something wrong with that.
I told you I'd set up a page for you. I'll give you the password if you need it.
Yeah, that'd be good. Who's that beautiful girl you've got up there anyway?
On yours?
Yeah.
That's a friend. I've added her as a friend for you.
Oh, is that how that works? Is it?
That's close, so Linda can't see it. It's all right.
Oh, good.
Yeah. Trent less than three is Twitter.
Let's talk a little bit technology, shall we? Jeff Dudley, our moderator, who is not with us this evening, did send me an email as he raced out the door tonight heading to work from the organisation called GetUp, or getup.org.au. And it says, "Dear Jeff, we won. Late last night, the Coalition announced it wouldn't be voting for an internet filter that censors the web. This comes after the government responded to our campaign by deferring the filter until 2012, with the likelihood that the filter will never come back in its current form. With Independent Senator Nick Xenophon, the Greens, and now the Coalition all walking away from the ineffective policy of censoring the internet, there is now no way for the Senate to pass the scheme." Sorry, Senator Conroy. What do you reckon? Is this it? Is this it buried and done and dusted, or do you think it's going to have some form of incarnation in about 3 weeks' time?
There are people saying at the moment, is it dead and buried? Is it done and dusted? Can we now safely assume that it'll never see the light of day? But I'm of the firm belief that if now, at this immediate point in time, that the government tried to actually get the legislation through, you know, it's not going to work for these reasons. But look, as they say, the show's not over till, you know, the fat lady sings or until the fat lady has her web traffic censored on the net filter. We're not going to know what's happening in 12 months or 18 months' time. If this review of the refused classification or RC content happens, and then for some reason they decide that they've rejigged the RC classification and the net filter is again viable, and some sort of deal is done with the Greens or the Independents, and they have some sort of compromise. Look, a week is a long time in politics, they say. Look how much has just happened here in the last week with the election campaign. What we're talking about is something that may or may not happen 12 months from now, 18 months from now. Look, anything could happen. And it doesn't necessarily...
And well beyond. The sort of thing we're talking about, this idea of censoring, of filtering things, removing the stuff that just doesn't suit politically, this is something that's very attractive to certain types of people, certain lobby groups, certain types of politician, and it's something that we must always, forever, be careful not to let them get away with. It's always going to be a temptation to the politicians, and we're going to have to make sure that we keep them honest forever.
I think the only time, Andrew, that we can say, yes, it is now dead and buried and it will not happen, is when the party that's trying to push the legislation through actually says that. If Conroy comes out or Gillard comes out and says, we've looked at this net filter and we ran it through all of these tests and we, you know, got the, you know, different lobby groups, interest groups involved, and we talked about it, we've determined that it's not the best course of action at this point in time, we're going to do something else. The day that you hear that, you can safely say it's dead and buried. It's
no,
not
you can't.
Have...
No, even then, you're still going to have to make sure that it doesn't come back in some other guise at some point in the future.
Yeah, they call it work choices.
Yeah, but Graeme, if there's a party that's pushing to get the legislation through and they say, look, we're no longer going to pursue it for whatever reason, that's a pretty safe bet to say they're not going to pursue it. But as you say, you still have to be vigilant to make sure that something isn't again and again
going to
come up in the future.
Because it's exactly the sort of concept that's going to be... going to appeal to a certain type of lobby group and a certain type of politician. Mm.
Just out of curiosity, has anyone ever heard anything from the Liberal Coalition Party about their communications policies? Is that guy Smith, whoever he is?
They've had the official launch. Mr. Abbott had the official launch. Was it during the week, last week?
Sunday.
And no news, no details about what their communications policy is going to be.
I heard him on the radio during the course of the week, Mr. Abbott, that is, or as Julia Gillard calls him, Mr. Rabbit. And they were having...
That's very funny.
They're having a bit of a tete-a-tete about, you know, policies and things like that. And Mr. Abbott was heard to say that that they don't believe that the NBN is the best way to doing it. And he was approaching it from a government-controlled, i.e. old telecom rollout type sort of attitude, whereas he believed that the private sector should be more involved and there is a better way of doing it for all Australians
then
using
the private
sector. Then
come out
and tell
us the details of what the better way is, because at the moment your policy looks like it's not standing up to scrutiny.
Whilst on the subject of mobile broadband, the market, the sector of mobile broadband is becoming incredibly competitive. Recently, we've seen both the main carriers, Optus and Telstra, drop their prices for entry-level bundles for mobile broadband. If you want to get your netbook, notebook, any type of iGadget, anything like that out there on the market, connect. I think the iPad actually started a lot of this trend. Anyway, VHA, which is Vodafone Hutchison Australia, formerly known as Vodafone, or Three, have now come and joined the party because traditionally they were the cheap alternative for a lot of telephony services on a mobile perspective, and they've basically cut the price of their prepaid mobile bundle to under $50 to try and face off the stiff competition from the incumbent and Optus. So we're going to see a bit more competition in this space, which has only got to be good. Let's see if they can work on telephone calls and call drops. I must admit, Dr. Ron, you and I, we've had a go at VHA in the last few months about their quality of calls. Well, today, they seem to be working on the network. It was nowhere near as bad as it had usually been.
They're getting better slowly but surely. Now, we noticed when they made the change overnight with their roaming arrangements with Telstra.
Well,
and you really did notice it overnight, didn't you? Like, straight away, you'd have call dropouts and handoff problems and that sort of stuff. But I went on a trip recently up to like northern Victoria and parts of New South Wales. I was pleasantly surprised by how the phone and the network was roaming, did a good job. And we maintained a call tonight, 18 minutes, nearly 20 minutes.
Unheard of.
There you go.
In recent three history.
And I was mobile.
Lost mobile.
I was mobile walking around. You were driving in your car and the call held up for...
Impressive, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, that's good. Well done, guys. And that's what's happening in the mobile broadband space at the moment. Mm. ACMA, the Australian Communications and Media Authority, apparently getting new powers to use somebody else's word, strangle the revenue streams of rogue operators of premium SMS and MMS services for up to 3 years. Now, this was revealed just today. So if you get these... you know, telemarketers that like sending you SMSs and MMSs, you know, those advertising things, and you dob them in using the, what is it, 0419 number, I think.
I'll tell you.
Dr. Ron, you just Google it for us.
I will.
ACMA recently launched a dob in a spammer. So if you get some unwanted marketing SMS or MMS to you, you can dob it into ACMA. I did just this the other day for Optus for a telemarketing call who breached the Do Not Call register. Watch this space is all I can say. Investigations are underway. I've been confirmed. Thanks to ACMA. They do a wonderful job, ACMA.
You're now assisting the ACMA with its inquiries.
Oh, is that the... Yes.
Is that right?
I believe so. They sent me an email saying, will you stand up in court? I said, absolutely.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
So, have you got that number yet?
I do. The spam SMS number is 0429-999-888.
Now, you just forward your text message onto that.
Yes, just forward it to that.
So if you get a text message, just hit the forward button on your phone and send it to that number again, Dr. Ron?
0429-999-888.
Excellent.
Can I go off on a complete tangent here?
No, just wait for me to finish this and you
can
go on your tangent.
I won't then.
The new powers, this is the new SMS powers for ACMA. The new powers come into effect of November the 3rd, 2010, and ACMA said it will have the power to issue a temporary do not bill order to stop suspect content suppliers from charging customers while it investigates the service.
But that would only apply to people doing it in Australia if there were foreign operators, rogue operators.
Yes.
Yeah, but if they can stop the bill from being... The bill has to be sent from within Australia for you to pay it. The bills... Like, these operators, they work through the telephone companies, so what you get is an extra charge on your Telstra bill.
That's right, yeah.
So if they can order Telstra not to bill those services...
It's putting pressure back on the local carriers to do something about people just dumping hundreds of thousands of messages into their networks. Mm. Yeah.
Did you want to go on your tangent now?
The spam SMS number. Now, did you notice how I read that number out?
No.
No?
I said 0429-999-888. That would be a fairly common, normal way of reading out that sort of a number, wouldn't it? When I caught up with Jeff Gates, who's a long-time listener and friend of...
Bill Gates.
Then. No, I'll tell you about when I caught up with Bill Gates a bit later. When I caught up with Jeff Gates...
Yes.
Who's
Hi, Jeff.
Long-time friend and of the panel and Tech Talk.
Been with us since almost day one.
Yeah, and I was reading out a similar phone number. This came up just in casual conversation with him, and he said, oh, it does my head in, you Australians, the way you talk with your phone numbers. And I said, what do you mean? He said, the triple, double, triple, triple, double, double, triple, all this stuff in the phone numbers. He said, it's apparently an Australianism. It's not done in the United States. He would read it similar to 0429-999-888. Like you think five, they say like 555, you know, like as their number. They don't say 555. They don't use triple or double when they're reading out phone numbers. And he said it did his head in.
And that's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, it was just a quirk.
I wasn't aware that that was one of the differences.
Well, okay, well, Jeff, would you like to pick up your phone and ring 613? 8682-8836.
Yeah, because we probably have been reading it as 8836.
We have. Yeah. So there you go. Yes, tell us a little bit about your hatred towards doubles and triples, thanks to Dr. Ron.
But he said it was an Australianism and something that we're not conscious of. We just do and take it for granted. That's how we read those sorts of numbers. But I thought that was interesting.
I think we should continue to read them like that.
Oh, I think we should.
Because I think one of the joys that the Americans can have in listening to the Tech Talk Radio podcast is to hear us talking in our quaint Australian
vernacular.
Yes. That's the way.
That's the one. You can also tune into Channel News 24 anywhere in the world, I think, and watch Julia Gillard speak in the not-so-Australian vernacular. She's true Stroin, isn't she? But anyway.
She is. We're doing all right there here in the colonies.
You are listening to Tech Talk Radio from the colonies this evening. I'm Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron and Graham Callaghan in this evening. Come and visit us on our chat.techtalkradio.com.au, which is where Jerry Mander is right now. And a few other regulars are in there.
Jerry Mander.
Hi, Jerry. Senator Conroy still there, so you can come along and say good day to him.
Artie's there, Trent's there, yeah. Smoke's there, all the usual. Warlock, yes. Plain old Laney tonight.
Now, I think the scapegoats are starting to fall from the skies in Apple Land over in Cupertino at the moment in a report in today. Mark Papermaster, that's a very unfortunate surname, but nonetheless, Mr. Papermaster. The Apple chief executive in charge of iPhone engineering has left the company. This is after the AntennaGate controversy of recent times.
Did he design the dodgy antenna?
Well, allegedly. We use the word allegedly in this thing.
Are we now after AntennaGate? Is AntennaGate over, is it?
No, not until iPhone 4.1 comes out. Yeah. Then it'll be over. It's a bit like the... what were we talking about before?
We're still in the thick of it. We're still in the thick of antenna gate, aren't we?
Are we? Well, unless you got your rubber bumper to go around the side of it so you don't capacitively short circuit the antenna on the edge of the thing. Have you seen the ads? They're death grip everywhere.
Death grip ads?
Death grip ads.
Who's putting these ads out? Apple. Really?
Yeah. You obviously haven't been watching any commercial television lately.
No.
Okay. Moving on. Apple spokesman Steve Dowling confirmed that Papermaster's exit and said that Bob Mansfield is assuming his responsibilities. To a degree, I'm sure. Anyway, Steve Dowling actually declined to provide a reason for the departure of the former IBM senior exec. So, yes. Is this the beginning of Applegate's demise or what? But
I want to hear from Australian owners, operators, users of the iPhone 4, and tell us what your experience is like.
Well, we saw one yesterday, last week.
In relation to the reception issues. Are you finding that there are reception problems in Australia as much as it is hyped in
Warlock's
the
got one, hasn't he? Didn't Warlock, who's an Apple developer in the chat at the moment, he'll tell us.
Did you queue up and get an iPhone 4,
did you get one?
Warlock?
Let us know.
Yeah, let us know.
Whether he's got the death grip or not, who knows? We'll wait and see. Now, other interesting news. By the way, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We're going to go to a break in just a minute. We're going to come back with Adam Turner's view from the couch. Victoria, which is the state in Australia from which we originate, has decided to trial electric cars. Now, Mr. Brumby. Just before I go on, for all of our listeners to know that the state government in Victoria is up for election fairly shortly too, within 3 months. So just bear that in mind as we talk about this. Brumby spent, who is the premier of current premier, spends $5 million of a $38 billion transport plan on zero emission vehicles. The Victorian government is seeking 180 households for a $5 million five-year trial of zero-emission electric cars. Now, if you saw the news, Dr. Ron, they wheeled them out, these funny little silver Mitsubishis. Did you see them?
I didn't see them, no.
Anyway, it's part of the $38 billion transport plan for the state, and the trial involved 180 charging points, well, I guess that's a PowerPoint, and 60 vehicles, passenger cars, light commercial vehicles, and two-wheelers to be rotated between the participants every 3 months. 5 years is a long time for a trial, I would have thought, and these guys are going to be using them for their day-to-day, you know, activities, dropping the kids off at school, picking up the shopping, doing the taxi services as you do between basketball, those sort of places. What do you reckon? Is it really time for a 100% electric car where you just plug into the local, you know, you go to the where the parking meter is in the city, you're going to find a GPO, a general purpose power outlet where you can plug your car in and charge it?
Is it 100% electric?
100%
or does it
have
a combustion engine which it uses to get you going?
100% electric.
Hmm.
Interesting concept.
I guess the question you've asked is the one that the trial will answer.
Yeah. Anyway, these cars, there's 20 of them arrived just yesterday in Victoria from Mitsubishi. Yes, they're fully electric vehicles, in answer to your question, Dr. Ron.
What's the top speed?
I don't know.
Got the data spec sheet there.
Now, let me have a scroll, just talk amongst yourselves, but I'd be saying that they're
at 8:30 in the morning on Punt Road, the same as everybody else.
Well, this is it. If you're commuting in and out of town during peak hour, it doesn't matter what the top
speed
is.
That's right, yes.
Absolutely. I wonder if they go in other places too. You know, they should take them up because, you know, Sydney's roads are pretty, you know, they're thinner roads. I lived in Sydney for a couple of years and it was really nice coming back to Melbourne because for no other reason than the roads were wider. You get lots of lanes, but up there it's like very squeezy and up and down and hilly.
Yeah, I haven't ever driven in Sydney, but yeah, I've been on a couple of pretty scary taxi rides.
Have you? Yeah, I made the mistake in Sydney saying I've got to catch a plane in half an hour and it's on the other side of the bridge. That was an event. That was before
I did something similar.
Yeah. All right, you are listening to Tech Talk Radio. Don't forget, come along and have a say good day, chat.techtalkradio.com.au, or pick up the phone and give us a ring, 88... Oh, it's very small.
Come on, you started it, son.
8682-8836. Oh, sorry, Jeff.
No. Read it correctly. Go on. Be Australian. Be proud.
Okay, Oka. 88. No, it's not 88. It's 8682-8836. See, look, you've thrown me now.
Now we've confused everybody.
More in a moment. I'm going to push the wrong button now. It's me.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Remember when Tech Talk Radio first hit the airwaves some 5-odd years ago? Listeners could ring up and say their bit. Remember that? Well, it's back.
The Tech Talk Radio feedback line has risen from the ashes. So if you have a comment, criticism, correction, or you just plain want to get it off your chest, then start dialing 03-8682-8836. The Tech Talk Radio feedback line is your direct line to being heard by millions of Tech Talk listeners around the planet. So get dialing 03-8682-8836. That's 03-8682-8836. Call now.
But we've run out of steak knives.
Android-powered, flash-enabled devices. I like the sound of that.
Yeah, the thing might end up costing a little bit more, working a whole lot better, and being a whole lot more future-proof.
And there's an LED backlight as well.
There's a humdinger. Rip Schneider.
It's a Perlaterra.
Are they selling on eBay?
Oh, yes.
Not that type of guy.
You sound disappointed, Graham.
Entertaining.
Now, I'd like to introduce a conspiracy theory at this point in time because...
Oh, good.
Informative.
We've got another case here of a complete and utter lack of perspective.
Independent.
No, the couch is unbleepable.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Unbelievable.
It is unbelievable, you're right.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Sorry, we're back now. welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb.
How was your Android powered?
Trying to work out what the music song we were talking about there in the chat.
Treats there in the break.
Yes. Lainey has sent in with Dr. Ron this evening some
Android powered
cupcakes.
the very best cupcakes in the entire universe. Thank you, Dr. Lainey.
Not bad at all, are they?
Very
you
good.
Can tell Lainey's son, it's full of butter.
Mm,
can I tell you how my wife. Nice. Tries to soften butter, or don't you want to know?
No, tell us.
During the course of the week, she tried something which even amazed me.
Really?
Yep. It needed some soft butter for a cake.
You stick it in the microwave for a couple of seconds?
Normal people do, yes. Yeah.
5 seconds?
Yeah.
Soften it up?
Yeah, no, she stuck it on the central heating vent.
Oh, no! your kittens...
Just as well she doesn't listen to us live.
Did your kittens get to it first? They would have started lapping it up. They would have loved it.
I quite often wondered where the vent had gone, actually, but anyway.
Did it all melt down into the...
I didn't see it, but apparently what the kids have said, yes, and they don't embellish the truth that much, so yes. Oh, dear. Yes. Sorry, Graham. The cakes are very nice, thanks, Laney. See, that's what happens.
Job that would be.
That's what TwitPic's made for. You should have been able to, you know, give Georgie. She's got your old mobile phone. She can snap a couple of photos and say, "Dad, look what Mummy did today," and put them up on the internet.
Absolutely, she does that anyway. Oh dear. Anyway, I'll get into trouble with that now. We got a view from the couch coming up in just a second.
Graham will edit it out. That's all right.
It'll be other people sending emails. It's a problem. What was I going to talk about? Yes, while we're speaking of Android, says he, looking forward as he goes to, the Android growth has been somewhat short of, or nothing short of astronomical in recent times. 200,000 new devices a day on Android. That's not bad. You're an Android user, Dr. Ron.
Yeah, I am, helped in no small part by the success of HTC and their fabulous handsets.
No, they're doing exceptionally well, aren't they? I was actually asked before I came on air tonight what the better handsets were at the moment. I sort of mentioned that I'd desired a new device. So, yes.
You desired
I did.
A new device. Did you? You've picked that word very carefully.
Yeah, no, the iPhone has been relegated to where iPhones belong. And the desire is now going to take full center stage fairly shortly when I work out how to use it and when I actually get it. But anyway, 200,000 Android smartphones activated per day. That's a lot of smartphones, isn't it?
It's a lot of smartphones.
So, yeah, they're doing incredibly well. And I think that's even outpacing, well, it is, the Apple iOS devices and things like that, that the new stuff. I haven't even upgraded the iPhone to iPhone OS 4 yet. I don't think JD has.
And quickly threatening the BlackBerry's dominance as the leading smartphone provider on the news release that I'm reading.
Well, yes. BlackBerry, RIM, they're going to come out with a new device fairly shortly. The thing that I found that's let the BlackBerry down is the screen size, because everyone's getting used to these full-screened or full-faced devices which you interact with now. And BlackBerry haven't gone there yet, but I reckon that's not far off. If I was speculating.
People that are BlackBerry users love them and they rave about them. And,
I cannot understand why.
But they do, though, don't they?
It's like a religion.
Well, when I was in the United States, they're BlackBerry everywhere. There's not many iPhones around. They're all BlackBerry devices everywhere. Yes.
I suppose it makes sense to have a sort of a text-only type device on a phone network that barely works for voice calls, let alone for data.
Oh, he's cynical, isn't he? Anyway, you could say that about some of the networks in this country, I guess, too.
You certainly could.
Yeah. So, and speaking of networks, Optus, we're talking about, Dr. Ron, you've just come out of shaping hell in your household. You exceeded your limit of bandwidth. I won't ask what you're downloading.
Not on Optus, though. I was with iiNet.
Yeah, and you got...
just tipped over a few days before the account...
They shot you in the knees, did they?
They did.
They kneecapped you.
They kneecapped me. They pulled a Hessian bag over my head and they barreled me into the back of an unmarked van and threw me down a mine shaft.
Was it Bob?
It was Bob. Bob was... he was the assailant. It was terrible. So I had to momentarily change ISPs for a couple of days. But we're back on track now. All is forgiven. We've kissed and made up and we're back on track with iiNet. But
don't be so stingy, Bob. Buy a bit extra, a few megabytes.
Oh, it killed me down to 64 kilobits per second for a few days. It was horrid. It was horrible.
Yes, I sympathise completely. I've been there and done that. And these days, I'm very careful to monitor my bandwidth. My little application that runs in the trade to remind me how much I've used.
You need a stick to put into the side of your server or your router or something like that so that you could share mobile broadband at least at half-decent browsing speeds when you get to those last few days. I don't know how you could have gone over to a slower service, but anyway.
Well, Graham,
how do we ever live with dial-up? Oh, my goodness.
Well, dial-up is slower than what I experienced. Isn't that? You only get up to about towards 56 kilobits per second on dial-up.
That's right.
Now, Graham made the keen observation before that there are plans emerging now where the shaped speeds
are higher than they used to be.
Higher than what I can get when I'm not shaped.
The traditional shaping speed is 64 kilobits per second, which is roughly mobile speed. Roughly dial-up speed. Having a look at the plans on TPG, and I'm sure they're not completely alone. And even their cheapest ADSL 2+ plan is only available where you've got ADSL 2+. It's not available where they've only got ADSL. But their cheapest ADSL 2+ plan, it comes with 12 gig for $29.99 a month, $30 a month. You get 4 gig peak, 8 gig off peak, and if you go over your limit, it shapes to 256K instead of 64.
For those of you who aren't familiar with what we're talking about, shaping is where, when you hit your end of your limit, how much you're allowed to have.
They slow you down.
Yeah, it's a bit like, Well, there's nothing really that compares to it, is it? It's a bit like taking your broadband away and putting it back on dial-up.
That's right, yeah.
So you can use a dial-up for the rest of the month.
But some of these plans on ADSL too, they don't slow you down quite as much. And if you go up on TPG still, if we go up to one of their higher plans, their $70 a month plan, for example, you get 100 gig peak, 100 gig off peak, and it shapes to 2 megabits after you've used your 100 gig.
Shaped to 2 megabits per second.
2 megabits per second,
whereas
yeah.
there'll be ISPs out there offering that as a...
As broadband,
as
yeah.
As a broadband plan.
1.5 is a... Yeah.
I wonder what's going to happen with
Telstra. NBN. Telstra used to offer 256k as broadband on ADSL 1 back in the bad old days. I don't know whether they still do. That's what we used to call on this program fraudband. But yeah, certainly better than dial-up.
Yes, fraudband. I remember that. Anyway, what I was going to talk about briefly is that Optus are trying something different in order to try and win back a bit of
what are Optus
customer
doing?
Share. They're offering fluid quotas on wireless broadband plans. Whatever. Fluid
quotas.
Yes, but anyway...
I don't want a fluid quota anywhere near my laptop. It'll stop working.
I've tried... Yes, no, not Coca-Cola or something. It'll definitely stop working.
I mean, they provide your water supply now as well as your internet.
Oh, it's like when the gas company sells you the electricity and the electricity company sells you your water and your water company sells you the gas.
Up to sell your fluid.
Yeah, I'm understanding.
It's like when the Morgan man came to poll me on the weekend. I thought he was going to sell me electricity. I said, not another... Oh, from Morgan. Okay. I don't like these door-to-door salespeople that try and sell you electricity. This is something that trusting that you just don't have with them. So
yes, and they come and they say, I'm from your electricity company.
And they shove
and
your
they're
foot
not.
In the door and move that or you'll lose it type sort of thing.
And you say, really? Who's that?
And they say, oh, well, it's, I'm from your electricity company and yeah. That's yes.
Andrew, what's a fluid thing?
Well, this is what Optus are doing. fluid quota on a wireless broadband plan, up to X gigabytes per month, depending upon when you use it.
This press release just hasn't been finished. They've just published this prematurely without... They've got X's and Y's
X's
and
stuff. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and they're supposed to have filled that bit in, but they haven't done it.
And a lot of question marks in it too. But anyway, Optus has launched a new range of wireless broadband plans that split usage between peak and off-peak times.
Oh.
Now, this is unusual because we've never traditionally had peak and off-peak in a wireless environment, have we? Well, not that I'm aware of.
We've had it quite a bit in our ADSL plans.
Yeah. Anyway, they go on to say the plans are slightly different to those used in the fixed broadband world in that there is no set division of a total quota allowance for peak and off-peak periods. Rather, the Cap 20 plan, for example, offers users between 1 gig and 2 gig of data for $20 a month over 2 years. Now, I'm getting confused already, and you are too.
Yeah, so how are we supposed to know? If we use 1 gig, are we going to be in trouble, or...?
It's a good question. The cap includes a certain amount of value, like the $80 on the 20 cap plan. Users are then charged 8 cents per megabyte in peak times and 4 cents per megabyte off peaks to access the data.
Oh no, this is bad.
Yeah,
if
you're not confused by now, don't buy this product.
Yeah, this is trying to do to the mobile broadband market what all the phone companies did to the mobile phone service market in terms of making the plans completely confusing and completely unrealistic.
Yes, if you've seen Inception, we've just gone to limbo.
You pay $80 a month and you get, $600 worth of calls, but you don't really get $600 worth of calls because really you only get $80 worth of calls.
Yeah,
it's all just done with, smoke and mirrors. This is not a good thing. This is introducing fear and uncertainty and doubt into the marketplace.
Yeah, on the basis that I charge you, say, $10 a minute for a phone call, then you're going to get $800 worth of calls in this plan.
That's right, yeah.
It's meaningless, you're right.
It is, and the thing too is that, I think I've discussed this on the program before, if you look at your usage, how the phone companies give you for $49, you get X hundred dollars worth of phone calls. If you actually divide that across and work out the actual call cost, that's what they're really charging. And there's probably still margin in that for them. And at the end of the day, once you exceed that limit or once you're outside of your cap, they ping you 35 cents or 30 cents just for flag fall, which is just initiating the call. And then they charge you 30 or 40 cents 30 seconds after that, which is just highway robbery. So,
in better news for Optus this week, they've announced that they've upgraded their HFC...
Oh, their DOCSIS.
Yeah.
80 megabits.
Cable network. Their
DOCSIS. You talked about this in the news, didn't you?
I think this is a better thing to talk about for Optus than the...
Well, we're going to cover all three, don't we?
You've just talked about HFC and DOCSIS. What we're talking about is Optus cable.
The black thing in the sky.
Connection. Yeah.
The big black
not an ADSL connection through a traditional phone line. Not a mobile broadband thing, but a thing that comes through a black cable like your pay TV cable.
Which they've had around for years. They rolled out in around about 1995, 1996, something around about then.
Yeah. Except in some suburbs of Melbourne where the council wouldn't let them. Remember that?
Yeah, that's right. There was a big kerfuffle with the local council.
In our broadcasting area here on 3WBC, in Camberwell, for example, Boroondara. No black cables there.
That's right. They wouldn't. Local councils wouldn't let them.
Well done, Boroondara.
Well, they've very recently, just upgraded to the speed of their cable network to 80 megabits per second using, Graham asks, what is DOCSIS? That's a standard. It's a protocol. It's used for delivering internet over coaxial cable.
Nah, it's technobabble. We're just talking about cable internet.
Yep, but yep. You asked what DOCSIS was. That's a standard.
No, I didn't. I said you said DOCSIS, and I said you should just say cable internet.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm explaining it.
Right.
Sorry, forgive me for explaining what I'm talking about.
I've got a question.
I'm just trying to be clear.
I've got a question. Andrew? Can I ask this question? DOCSIS is what Telstra rolled out about, I think, the beginning of this year, Christmas time, if I recall, and they achieved off-the-cuff speeds of 100 megabits per second with speeds capable of up to 200 megabits per second through their cable, as you use it, call yes. It, Graham. Why is Optus only managing to get to 80?
It's a good question. We'd have to ask Optus.
Well, maybe they just don't want to go through bandwidth too quick.
Maybe. The DOCSIS itself wouldn't limit the speed, I don't think. It would. That would be
That'd be
dependent on the equipment that they're using.
It's network-related, yeah.
Yeah. Look, they've said that it's a fourfold improvement on what was, and that the speeds would be available to more than 1.4 million homes. Now, they don't have 1.4 million customers connected, I don't think. I think that's like the cable passes 1.4 million homes, so you could connect up if you wanted to.
They'd like to have 1.4 million homes.
I think they would, yeah. And when asked about the long-term future of the network, the spokesperson said it would come as no surprise that Optus continued to have constructive conversations with NBN Co, which is the agency responsible for the deployment of the national broadband network.
Wonder how NBN Co are going to cap their usage. They're going to slow you down to maybe 10 meg. As opposed to 100 meg.
I don't think that's going to be a decision that NBN Co will make. I think NBN Co will sell bandwidth wholesale to providers like Internode, and Internode will come up with their own plans.
I don't
and
have the.
Everybody will have different caps and levels of service.
I don't have the paperwork in front of me, so please excuse me if I'm wrong here, but some politician came out, and I think it might have been Stephen Conroy during the week, and said that hopefully caps will be a thing of the past on the NBN. Once it gets out there and fully operational, to which the ISPs responded, no, not on your Nelly.
I think the caps might change a lot, though.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But and speaking of things changing, Google have dumped their wave. They're no longer drowning, they're waving. I mean, they're no longer waving, they're drowning. Well, words to that effect for that great song. Now, Dr. Ron, you touched on this in the middle of the news, too. It just didn't happen for them.
It didn't happen for them, no. The Wave, if you don't know, was a project
I've got a Wave account, but I only ever used it once.
Well, it's
I think you gave it to me, too.
I probably did. I probably sent you an invitation. It's a project that...
What is this thing?
Well, it's a project that Google undertook.
No.
It's not anymore. What they did was they set out and they said, if we were going to design email, for example, today, how would we do it? What would it look like if we wanted a communications tool? And if you look at email today, and it's not something that you'd really use by choice. It's not encrypted in any way. It's subject to problems. It's not secure. It was a good protocol, 20, 30 years ago. But Google thought, well, let's design something from the ground up with the tools that we have at our disposal now. And so they looked at Google Docs and they looked at their web-based email service and they thought, let's have a real-time collaboration or messaging tool where you can actually see other people typing, you can post videos, you can post audio, you can include links and text and all that sort of good stuff. But it just didn't take off.
Adam Turner, our regular correspondent, who was in the studio last week, it was great to have him here too, by the way, has a view on this from his couch. And here's this week's view on the Google Voice.
Google Wave was a classic example of build it and they will come, except they didn't come. Google has pulled the plug on the mind-bending Google Wave project, which was designed to be a cross between email and instant messaging. Of course, it was a hell of a lot more than that, and it really had the potential to completely change the way we interact with each other online. Google doesn't plan to continue developing Wave as a standalone product, but it will maintain the site at least through to the end of the year and, quote, extend the technology for use in other Google projects. The Google Wave protocol is freely available, so people can run their own Wave servers if they really want to. Wave was the answer to a question that not enough people were asking, yet. It was amazing to wander around within Google Wave and chat to the early adopters who were working hard to forge a brave new world. The closure of Google Wave is no reflection on their efforts, but more a reflection of the fact that Google Wave was so far removed from everything else we know. Wave's potential was obvious, but unfortunately, I just didn't have a practical day-to-day use for the service. It was just one more inbox to check. Perhaps if it was possible to tightly integrate Wave with my existing communications from day one, then I might have taken more of an interest in Google Wave. I know that defeats the purpose, but revolutions don't happen overnight, like fax or email. New communications tools need to complement existing channels of communication until they reach a critical mass of users. Google Wave didn't complement existing communications and it never reached that critical mass of users. Considering Google's reputation for supporting new projects, it's surprising Wave wasn't given longer than a year to find its place in the world. You can already see the influence of Google Wave on other Google products such as Google Docs. Personally, I'd like to see Google bring back support for Google Notebook, which featured a similar interface to Wave and would be a very handy tool if it was integrated into Google Docs and with a sprinkling of Wave magic. It really seems that Google Wave was cut down before it could reach its full potential, and it'll be interesting to see what the boffins at Google come up with next.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Smoke Salmon in our chat has said that Wave was like Inception for email. Which is not unlike... It's not
mind-bending is what he's trying to say, yeah.
So, without going into what Inception's all about, but yes. And also, I think Warlock mentioned too that Wave was an Australian, or started off here in Australia, which it certainly did, in Sydney, in fact, Google Australia.
Yeah, Artie in our chat room says, yeah, the Google Maps blokes, those people.
Them's the guys.
What wrote Google Maps?
Yeah, yeah. But anyway, mighty fine. I did actually see, I think like a lot of people saw it, the guys up there demonstrating how it worked, and it was quite impressive. It had a lot of potential, but... That's where it ended, I'm afraid.
I did. Well, they're still supporting it, I think, as Adam said.
Till the end of the year.
Yeah.
But only, which is unusual. I would have thought that if developers had been out there and been giving it plenty, then they would have developed. They would have supported it a tad longer.
I think what you'll find is that, yeah, there's no one using it. It doesn't really do anything useful for anybody. But some of the underlying technologies, some of the techniques they've learned while they've been, you know, working on Wave will pop up in other things.
I'm sure they'll...
Yeah, I think it'll all be valuable code that will drift around Google and find a better home somewhere else.
Mm. Yeah, it won't have been a wasted experience from Google's point of view.
I doubt that very much.
Mm. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. That was Adam Turner, his view from the couch. You can hear him here each and every week on Tech Talk Radio.
Mm.
And if you want more of him, just check out his website, adamturner.com.au, or any of the Sydney Morning Herald or Age type sort of blogs you'll
Google
find in there.
Adam Turner, you'll sort of find some interesting articles written by him around the place.
Absolutely. All right, you are listening to Tech Talk Radio. We're going to take a break as Graham's got to finish his cupcake, and we'll be back with more in a moment.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio.
Now, let's talk about Freeview.
Hey, someone just joined the Wave.
They're the people I want to avoid the calls from.
Comes in very handy, especially when your files get really, really big and corruption takes place.
So you went,
A. Dude, it's not even a beta. It's just for us to play around with.
They also cited taxes and freight costs.
Just mount it on your desktop and run it direct.
It's a big risk.
So you watch the webcam.
Yeah.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show, Tech Talk Radio. You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show,
Tech Talk.
Talk Radio.
You know that thing I was talking about before with Conroy and the NBN and Uncapped and stuff like that?
Yes.
I found the article. ISPs rejected a prediction by Federal Communications Minister that capped data plans will disappear once the $43 billion national broadband network is built. Senator Conroy forecast last week that the AIIA broadband agenda, even that capped internet plans, under which broadband consumption is limited per month, will be eliminated by the increase in competition introduced by the NBN.
I think I agree with the ISPs, and I think I agree with Graham in that, yeah, they are going to determine what their plans are, what the terms and conditions are for the subscriber.
And there may well be some unlimited plans, but I reckon there'll still be some capped plans as well.
I think so, yes.
Hey, if you live in Melbourne too, here's a bit of good news, some free Wi-Fi on your trams. Which bank?
Free,
not that one.
Wi-Fi on trams.
Yeah.
This is good. Who's
this is
providing
to make
it?
Up for Mikey not working?
Well, if only it was by the state government. Now, don't say anything too loud. They might think, oh, that's a good idea for the election.
Look over here. Look over here. Look over here. Don't look over there. Look over here. Yes, yeah, anything to take your attention away from...
I'm
from
on a horse.
Our disastrous ticketing system. interesting. So, this is happening on trams, and who's providing it?
Oh, guess... Well, you'll never guess. It's a bank.
You mentioned a bank.
I did. The ANZ.
The ANZ Bank.
Yeah. Commuters in Melbourne's leafy inner east will enjoy benefits of free Wi-Fi as they hop on trams departing the Malvern Terminal in the mornings following a sponsorship deal with the Big Four Bank. That's ANZ. Until October 24, the ANZ branded Wi-Fi tram. So they've got to get on the right tram. There's not just every tram. There's an ANZ tram that's going to zip around. It'll alternate on routes 5, 6, 8, 16, 72, and the supplementary number is that run down the Dandenong Road, High Street, Turak, Glen Ferry, and commercial roads. So there you go. Keep an eye out for that tram. Or if you're driving next to it, jump on. Use your Wi-Fi on your mobile device.
Don't use...
But remember, don't text
browse
whilst
the web
driving.
While you're driving. Really bad.
So there you go. There's a bank providing free Wi-Fi on a tram. But... I think I saw the other day, too, that there's televisions or something coming on trains or something. What's the world coming
to?
Yeah,
I heard about that as well. They were talking about
it another election ploy
government
by some
radio,
government?
And someone was saying, oh, who's going to decide who gets to hold the clicker while you're in the train carriage?
Yeah. Maybe it'll stop the young people getting restless and drawing on things. They can watch television instead.
I don't know. I did hear them talking about that, actually. Yeah. Yes. So you're going to put TV screens and things in the... just on a loop in the carriages, so you
I read this book. Yeah, telescreens everywhere. Yeah.
Telescreens, yeah.
Yeah, I read this book.
They'd be able to see what you're doing in the train carriage as well.
Yes.
Yeah, through the telescreens.
And some animals are more equal than others. No, yeah, that was a different book.
That's
same,
a different
yes.
book. I think you're on the...
I remember when digital television was first touted, that there were strange little advertising channels that they could put on their digital stream so that you could have a, LCD or a screen of some sorts tilted into the vertical position, and then you could change the data on those screens. Like, you know how you see the paper posters around town now? Well, you can all be electronic. Maybe that's going to come to fruition. I think they do it in Singapore.
Metro.
Oh, no, they won't address you by name like they did in that film.
Minority Report.
Yeah.
Just as well.
That
really.
Was cool. That was you can see that happening in 50 years' time.
Yeah.
Walking past billboards and it says, hey, Graham, you haven't popped in to buy a new Toshiba laptop for a while.
Toshiba won't be around in...
No. Science fiction.
That would not be a way to get me to buy a Toshiba laptop, I can tell you.
No. Metro, who runs our trains in Melbourne, says that the company has called for tenders to install the screens... In the train carriages.
There's no other state in Australia that would do this, surely.
Which would show news, sport, weather and metro information.
Oh, good. That'll start riots on the footy days, won't it?
But it will. Paid for by ads. The move has come as after Metro admitted it failed to meet its timetable target. So we're talking about non-technology things there. But, yeah, there we go. So Metro Vision. That'll be good.
Maybe they're putting him in to see if they get the trains to run on time. No one will notice. So
yes, yeah.
Anyway, let's not talk
along
about
the same theory as the Wi-Fi and the trams.
That's
anything
correct.
To distract you from the quality of the actual
Absolutely.
Service.
Absolutely.
A spokeswoman said that the plan to put LCD screens in the carriages was still in its infancy. Well, I think it's a good idea.
Yeah. Do you reckon they'll last more than a foot? As in, literally a foot. The young people of these days. That's a gross generalisation, isn't it? I shouldn't go there, but really.
Yeah, you have to wonder about, the issues like vandalism and
exactly.
How long they're going to last. So I'm sure they'd be durable and robust and such things.
Oh, well, we'll wait and see. Now, we were talking about electric cars arriving for a bit of a test spin here in the state of Victoria. Google have backed an electric car, and they're doing a they've got electric car plans available.
Does it not drive forwards? Why are they backing it?
Well, yes, they're supporting it. Maybe I should rephrase myself there, Graham.
I was confused there for a minute.
Anyway, they've released plans available as a do-it-yourself download to build your own electric car. South Australian engineers will take their 350-kilogram, three-wheeled electric car to Geneva this month for a zero-emissions race around the world, backed by high-level interest from Google Australia. See, Google Australia doing all sorts of good things.
Three-wheeled electric car.
Yeah. Dubbed TREV, or the two-seater renewable energy vehicle.
Oh, I like it already.
The two-seater. See, there's an acronym there. See, technological people do that, don't they?
Yes.
The world's full of TLAs. Yeah.
TREV. This is an enhanced TLA.
Yes, it is. It's got an extra letter. That's the two-seater.
An FLA.
Renewable energy vehicle.
ETLA.
The Lime car is Australia's only entrant to the carbon neutral zero race on August the 16th. Now, I didn't know there was a carbon neutral zero race anywhere in the world. But that's got to be good, doesn't it? Do they have solar cars? Is BP entering it? That's what I want to know.
BP's got enough on its plate at the moment. Well, I'm worrying about entering into solar car challenges just quietly.
Now, an electric car is not all that clean and green if you're running it in Victoria. Because,
well, if it's sourced from a coal fire.
Because all our power in Victoria is sourced from the dirtiest of possible fuels, the brown coal out in...
Then they upsell it. They say it's clean coal. How does that work? You still got to burn it.
Still got to burn it. That's right.
Absolutely. Anyway, Trev.
Do you know something interesting? Just to go completely off topic here for a moment.
Pass the cakes, Dr. Ron.
I was hearing about some scientists who are working on geothermal power.
Oh, this is where you dig a big hole.
Dig a big hole.
And put lots of cold water and it comes up steam on the other side.
That's right.
Yeah.
And they've worked out that one of the best ways, there's places on the planet where this works better than other places. And one of the best places to do geothermal power is underneath a brown coal deposit. Because the brown coal in the surface layer of the Earth acts as an insulator to keep the heat underneath hot.
So if we remove the coal, are you going to say the Earth's crust is going to heat up and 2012 will happen?
Well, what I'm saying is that you could build the places in Victoria where we're digging up the brown coal and burning it to provide power.
Mm-hmm.
They'd actually do just as well if they left the brown coal there to insulate the ground and use the hot stuff underneath to do geothermal. You could build a geothermal power plant right next door to where the coal-fired power plant is now and use it to do baseload clean, green energy, power generation. Your distribution cables already go to that part of the state. It would be a fantastic thing. And
why aren't they doing it, Dr. Graham? Why aren't you out there whipping?
Build
their
a geothermal plant right next door to the coal plant, and when the geothermal's up and running at speed, you shut down the coal plant and leave the brown coal in place.
Are you running for Parliament?
I should, shouldn't
yeah,
I?
Yeah, I think so. It's the best thing I've heard anyone say about renewable energy.
Yeah, I mean, this is such a phenomenally great idea, but it relies on not digging up the brown coal that's already there.
We should do a good show on renewable energy, not so much everything that's down the track, but becoming home enthusiasts, getting solar cells out, doing that, because it is quite achievable, and I don't think it's anywhere near as expensive as it used to be. Solar cells. There's shops around that sells you, 12 volt 5.
There certainly are.
And
you put a bit of investment in and you can be selling power back to the electricity company.
And what's to say that you can't use a bit of 50-50? Like, even if you can't afford the full whack to start off with and put, lots of solar panels on your roof and lots of batteries in your basement, start off doing just maybe the lighting circuit in your house, providing, renewable electricity just for your lighting.
The systems these days are really intelligent, so they can use your solar generated power, and if you have your heater on for a couple of hours and the electric radiator on for a couple of hours in the evening and it uses more than your system can provide, it'll suck some in from the main grid. But then at other times, when you're at work and there's no one home using any power, it can be selling electricity back much more than you've used for those couple of hours in the evening.
Get the meter spinning the other way.
Yeah, that's right. So the meter spins, one way when you're using a lot of power, but the other way when you're not. And the net result might be that the thing makes money for you.
Do smart meters spin backwards? you know, the ones we're all paying for now and haven't got yet?
I think the smart meters don't actually have the spinning thing anymore.
No, it's
I think
all
they're
electronic
now, yeah. Yes. I think the spinning thing is...
It's a bit like a poker machine.
You've got your age you there. You've
got a SIM card. The new meters have got a SIM card in them.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
So I can make phone calls on it?
No, you can't make phone calls on it, but the electricity company can send a message to your meter and say, the plan that Andrew's on, where he's getting buying cheap electricity, he's agreed that we can load shed and we can turn off his the air conditioner in his living room if we need power.
Oh, really?
Absolutely.
Is this a national...
Absolutely.
...national plan, these smart meters?
This is what the smart meter stuff's all about.
From Cairns to Tassie, you're all going to cop a smart meter.
Well, you're going to get a smart meter. You're going to have a little antenna inside it or on the outside of it. You're going to have a SIM card in there. It's going to be a little mobile phone, little data modem-y device inside. And the your electricity
for them.
Yeah, your electricity provider can not only interrogate your meter remotely, but they can send commands and they can say, well, Graham's signed up on this plan. He's actually paying quite a premium to have power delivered all the time and for us to leave him alone.
Is this going to be...
But Andrew, on the other hand, when it gets to a 48-degree day and he's got 8 air conditioners running, the power company can say, well, the plan that Andrew's on, he's agreed that we can shut down this part of his house if we need to.
But that might be quite sensible. I'd much rather they turn off my air conditioner for a couple of hours than to black out a whole suburb.
Black out a whole suburb, yeah.
And at least then I can keep running the things that I really need to keep running, like maybe my freezer with my food in, or maybe my computer with all my work on.
Now, Andrew, just going back to what you were talking about before, tell us about Trev. You said Trev was had three...
Oh, sorry, I've scrolled off. I thought
Oh, we've moved on, have
we? Moved on from Trev.
Did Trev have three wheels, you said?
He did,
Yeah, you see, I'm a bit worried about that, because I saw recently an episode of Top Gear where Jeremy Clarkson was driving the Reliant Robin three-wheel vehicle, and every time he went to do so, he so much as sneezed, the thing would roll over in a catastrophic fashion.
That was a very, very funny piece.
It was very funny. I worry about the stability of three-wheel vehicles.
All right, well, now we're back on
the Trev
again. I think
maybe it might have come, the technology might have improved a bit in the last 30-odd years.
Was that device he was using a Citroen by any chance?
No, it was a Reliant.
Yes.
Anyway, let's talk about Trev. He's a two-seater renewable energy vehicle. He's the only car which is basically entering into this race. Now, this race sounds quite interesting. He will use, Trev that is, 2,100 kilowatts of energy during the 30,000-kilometre race through Moscow, Shanghai, San Francisco and Cancun in Mexico. I have friends who like Cancun a lot for all the wrong reasons. So that's an interesting...
What are the wrong reasons?
I'll tell you after the show.
Righto.
Not more bits I have to cut out of the podcast.
No, absolutely not. lithium polymer battery packs give it a range of about 250 kilometres per fill per charge.
Yeah? Yeah.
Don't know what its charge rate's like. But anyway, this is a do-it-yourself car. You can download it from Google. Build your own electric car, which would be good.
This is fantastic. One of the great things that we've seen, and it's a little bit underdone in the last sort of maybe 10 or 15 years of technology in the world, is the amazing progress we've made in battery technology.
It's been totally lacking for a while, and we've just seen this exponential sort of boost in batteries in recent times.
If you think back to the first generation mobile phones, they had nickel cadmium batteries in them.
Nikes.
And that was
memory effect.
Oh. Memory effect was a bit of a myth, actually, if you think about it. But yes, The NiCad batteries were
they
not,
used to grow these films over their contacts too.
Well, they did, yes, and they used to grow crystals inside the actual.
You had to nuke them to get rid of them, but you don't try that at home.
No.
And I didn't say that here. Not in the microwave either. Don't put batteries in the microwave.
Never ever. The progress we've made in battery technology has been absolutely phenomenal in the last 10 or so years. And
what's impressed you so much about it?
Well, people don't quite realise how far it's come. The size and capacity of the batteries and how cheap they are. The lithium ion batteries that we have in all our phones and devices now. I mean, people complain about an iPhone battery not giving them a full day, but if you look at how many watt hours of electricity come out of this thing over the course of a day, it's absolutely phenomenal. It's dozens of times more than batteries could do just a few years ago. It really is one of the it's something you don't think about because it's sort of underlying the technology. It's not the frontline technology, but it just to as an observer of technology, it's something that I'm always amazed by, is to look at the capacities on the batteries and the devices I use.
I definitely agree that it's come of age of recent time, but don't you think the manufacturers are taking advantage of that by making smaller, thinner, flatter batteries?
Absolutely.
Which last a shadow of the time of the thicker,
and the weight
fatter
of the batteries too.
Because if you put today's technology into an old clunker, as you spoke of just before, it would probably last weeks, if not months.
it almost certainly would.
And it didn't have all the shenanigans that the current mobile smartphones have to do. That is, you know, phone home and do latitude for people and check your email and do all that sort of stuff, which just sucks the juice out of batteries, to be quite honest, doesn't it?
Keep the Twitter client running. Keep everything up to date.
Most important. Yeah. Most important.
Take movies, post stuff to YouTube. Couldn't do that 10 years ago, could we?
No. Do we really need to do that whilst we're on the move? I guess that's what Channel 24 is all about, isn't it?
What Channel 24 is all about, posting
shoot
stuff
a video
on YouTube.
Bang it up on YouTube and you'll find yourself on the news. But you're holding a battery, Graham.
I've just pulled the battery out of my mobile phone.
It's small.
It's the tiniest little thing. It weighs absolutely nothing.
If you can imagine a 50-cent piece square, that's about the size of it, isn't it?
It's just a little bit bigger than a 50-cent piece. It's just a little bit thicker too, not much. It's a 3.7-volt device with 1,050 milliamp hour capacity. If you work that out, that's 3.9 watt hours. That's really...
As Dr. Ron takes a photo of it for...
Sorry, I'm trying to hold it in such a way that it shows the size.
Mm. No, I agree that the battery technology has come of age. And are you saying that this has led into solar developments too? Is that what you're sort of hankering
with? Well, it's feeding into everything, into electric cars, into solar cars, into solar installations and in homes, into... you know, laptops, mobile phones, these digital portable audio recorders that we're using that record the podcast that most of our listeners are probably listening to. They're everywhere, and it's just amazing technology.
We'll probably end up seeing solar panels on these electric cars that they're going to try so they can do trickle charging
certainly.
While they're driving around.
Almost certainly.
It's a good bit of space. You could use it, couldn't you?
Yep, and, you know, the other technology that's possible is fuel cell technology, where you use the electricity to produce hydrogen, use the sun to produce DC to produce hydrogen from water. You put your hydrogen in your car in a fuel cell, mix it with oxygen. What's the waste product? Water. Beautiful.
Certainly sounds environmentally friendly, doesn't it?
Mm.
And a good option down the track too. What about mobile phones? We should be able to have charging devices built into the back of mobile phones, don't you think? So, you know, you want to charge your phone up, just put it upside down and put it in the window at the office.
Yeah, well, they've got
wouldn't that be a way
they've
to
got
go?
Devices now that do that. You can get add-ons for your phone.
No, but you want it as part of the phone.
Yeah, well,
the problem is the phone
technology
doesn't spend
exists.
Its life in the sun. That's the problem.
No. But when you're in this, like, we all know. We've all been there. Your mobile phone battery's gone flat.
Yeah.
You're sitting at the office. What do? You plug it into the charge and you hope for the best before you race out the door at night. What's to say, oh, my phone's flat, I'll just put it upside down. If you're on a train, a bus, wherever, and you've got sunlight coming in, you could trickle charge it, surely. Give you the ability to make a 30-second phone call if you needed to, if not more.
Yeah, maybe.
That's space. Let's use the space on the back of these devices.
Hmm. I think what we'll find with mobile devices and charging technology is that there's been people tinkering for years with contactless charging so that you don't have...
Oh, this is these loop things,
these
isn't
loop
it?
Things. So you
I've
don't
seen
have
little battery chargers for phones like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, so you don't have to plug your phone into the charger. You just have to put it in the charging space.
That's the sort of thing I was talking about. So you drop it onto a mat or a pad and it will just
that's
charge.
Right, yeah. So you'll have one of these pads on your desk at work and you'll have one on your bedside table at home and you'll have public ones in various places. Convention centres will be full of them. Hotels will be full of them. Yeah, you just drop your phone down. Hopefully there'll be a standard, and the Europeans will probably look after that, like they're trying to get a standard charger in for all mobile phones. And yeah, you'll just drop your phone or your iPod or your digital recorder or your laptop onto one of these charging pads, and it'll charge.
The USB mini USB connector is becoming pretty standard as a charger, isn't it? Charging connector.
Yeah, I don't know that it's that one that's on the bottom of my phone.
Yes,
that Nokia very cleverly put there on this Nokia phone that you can't that doesn't actually take power from and won't charge from.
it's
thanks,
just,
Nokia.
It's just a USB, just a USB interface.
Yes, data only. Yes,
so I've got one.
I don't
on the
know
bottom
what the point. Why would you put one there and then not use it as the power source?
And they've gone out of their way to actually put a completely separate power concentric power connector.
And even if they had a separate power connector, so you could use either, but you know, why put a USB connector there and then not use power from it?
Nokia. The HTC uses them.
Yeah.
Yep.
I think most phones do these days. In fact, a lot of devices...
Quite a few smartphones do, yeah.
Smart gadgets.
It's really intelligent. It's starting to be smart design.
Now, we're going to start seeing USB 3 come out shortly.
Mm.
Now, that's a different plug and connector altogether. So, what's going to happen there? We're going to start seeing USB 2 plugs and sockets disappear because USB 3 is going to take over?
Is it a different connector?
It's a different connector.
Okay.
So, it's...
Oh, well, that'll be interesting. I don't know. What'll happen there?
So, just as we're about to get into a pseudo-standard of devices having USB 2 small miniature jacks on them for charging, and I must admit, in my car, I have the cigarette lighter adapter, and it just brings it down to 5 volts, and you just plug a USB device into...
Yep.
Back to charge a phone, a device, anything whilst you're mobile.
I've got a couple of USB ports in my car too for that reason.
And there's a good Christmas present or birthday present for the person who has everything. You can never do enough of those little car adapter things, can
That's
you?
Right.
Because you lose them.
Very,
or drop
very
them
handy.
Or, yeah. The kids get hold of them and do stuff like that. So, look, it's interesting where it's all going to go in that sort of field. And the more and more these new phones and smart devices come out too, the more and more we're seeing new things happen.
Mm.
Batteries are still obviously key to it, but... Hopefully, they're becoming a little bit more lean and mean. What about the iGadgets, like the iPods? They go on forever. They don't have phones in them, do they? They're very lean and mean on Jungle Juice, aren't they? Most players aren't they?
Well, my iPod goes for several days, and, yeah, I only charge it on occasion when I think of it. But, I guess these things vary. The two things in our gadgetry that eat power to a phenomenal amount are hard disks.
And that's why they turn them off.
Yeah,
and
radio transmitters.
Oh, yeah.
So that's why the mobile phone, the iPhone, where it's got radio transmitters going all the time, that's what chews up the battery. And,
so radio transmitters, you're talking about, that's your mobile phone, frequency transmitters.
Yep.
You're talking about Bluetooth.
Yep.
You're talking about Wi-Fi.
Yep.
Wi-Fi eats my mobile phone battery.
Yeah, yeah. It's radio transmitters and hard disks are the things that eat your battery in your devices.
And hard disks sort of fall under the category of moving parts, don't they?
That's the reason, yeah. Because got an electric motor in to spin the platters.
Yeah, so what about SSD then, the software equivalent?
That's
of
one of the
drive.
Big advantages of SSD is that
it's a lot less power.
That's right.
So cooling fans as well fall into that category?
You don't often find cooling fans in battery-powered devices. I suppose you do in laptops, yeah.
Sometimes,
the cooling fans are generally moderately efficient, though, so... Yeah, the hard disk, though, it's got to spin and it's got to have that stepper motor that chews up power too to move the head around.
So you eliminate that, eliminate fans, then, yeah, you're well on the way, aren't you?
Yeah.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Andrew McComb, Dr. Ron, Graham Callaghan in this evening. We're nearly out of time. We're going to come back in just a few moments and do what Dr. Ron is famous for, the Oddspot gadget and website of the week. I was going to talk briefly tonight about a survey which came out, because you know how we like surveys in this show.
Mm.
I found a doozy during the course of the week. It's the iPad Opinion Profile. It talks about the personality, values, and demographics behind consumer opinions of the iPad.
Interesting.
Yeah, we're running out of time, though, for that, so we're going to have to roll that into next week.
Next week.
How's yours going, just quickly? You still getting some use out of it?
I don't use it anymore. It's relegated to the charging station under the bed. The kids use it all that.
Oh, it's a kid's thing.
It's a device for the... Well, yeah, and that's the reason behind it. It was bought for the family. It's the always-on internet device which floats around the house, which anyone can use at any particular point in time to find out what the weather's going to be like, play a game, all that sort of stuff. It's good.
Or to watch their favourite ABC... Two program if someone else is looking at something else on the telly?
To a degree. iPad doesn't really support flash.
It doesn't
video
do the. Oh,
much.
Okay, sorry.
Excuse me. But it's good. We have a lot of movies on there and the kids sit down and it's great. Good for the car if you're going on a trip. You can plug it into your Wi-Fi and stream stuff. Good for YouTube too. But be careful with the kids on YouTube as well. So yes, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Don't forget chat.techtalkradio.com.au. Come and say good day. Also the feedback number 0386828836. I must make that bigger on the sheet of paper. I'll bring my glasses next time, I think. Anyway, Oddspot Gadget website of the week after this.
This has to be the best technology show on the internet, Tech Talk Radio.
Remember when Tech Talk Radio first hit the airwaves some 5-odd years ago? Listeners could ring up and say their bit. Remember that? Well, it's back.
The Tech Talk Radio feedback line has risen from the ashes. So if you have a comment, criticism, correction, or you just plain want to get it off your chest, then start dialing 03 8682 8836.
The Tech Talk Radio feedback line is your direct line to being heard by millions of Tech Talk listeners around the planet. So get dialing 03-8682-8836. That's 03-8682-8836. Call now.
But we've run out of steak knives.
I'm not sure that they're driving competition out of the whole marketplace.
Well, no, they won't take a definitive stance on that either.
You don't win elections, you lose them.
Who's in the limelight for all the wrong reasons is the question.
Oh, but it's great. That's outside Australia.
Lots of girls on the floor there doing development.
Flash is available for free and I can develop on it for free, can I?
No.
Most modern name servers dealt with that without even blinking.
Entertaining.
That's very hard to do when it's...
it really is hard to do.
Simulate it.
Informative.
It's a glorified phone, but it's...
Independent.
That's their own stupidity.
That's exactly right.
Yeah, I agree.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
See, there's some things you just got to do on...
Listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Cool! Oh, this thing is amazing!
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
The Hanvon BC10C touchpad is an iPad-like tablet computer running Windows 7 Home Premium.
Another tablet, just what we need.
Yeah, Hanvon Graham is...
From the doctor.
Frantically trying to Google it or type it in. H-A-N-V-O-N. BC10. It's got a larger-than-iPad 10.1-inch screen. It weighs 900 grams. It has a USB and an SD card slot, which the iPad doesn't, as well as a mini HDMI port. How good's that? Mini HDMI.
Everything's got to be a bit more than what the iPad has.
It has a multi-touch interface with superior handwriting recognition, says the Officeworks blurb, and it has three customizable buttons to launch your favorite programs. It's selling for about $898 Australian.
So does it have a little tagline on the bottom that says sent from my iPad?
It has a little tagline.
I hate that. Will you please turn that off, though? You know who you are. Turn that off.
Sent from my Hanvon BC10C touchpad is what it says. It's got a 320 gig disk in it, 2 gig of RAM, a 1.3 gigahertz processor, and a couple of bucks shy of $900 Australian.
Oh, okay.
For more information, go to officeworks.com.au. It's where you can buy them in Australia. The Hanvon BC10C
only Officeworks
touchpad. At this stage, yes, they've got exclusive reselling rights, I believe.
Oh, okay. Alright.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
Andrew Graham, do you get frustrated with Microsoft Outlook or your BlackBerry Mail where you're trying to search for things? You remember someone sent me that email a while ago, but I can't find it now.
I don't have that trouble at all. I use Google Mail.
Well,
there's always one.
If you do have that trouble, inbox backwards is Zobni, www.xobni.com.
What is this with spelling things backwards and making them trademarks and brand names these days?
Well, this is our website, Angel. I'll explain Zobni.com. If you're frustrated with the generic search features of Microsoft Outlook or your BlackBerry Mail or whatever, Zobni creates profiles for every person you've ever communicated with, that have been CC'd in emails. These profiles contain relationship statistics, contact information, threaded conversations, shared attachments, and information on contacts which Zobni pulls from social networks.
Oh, then they're going to be wrong.
Including LinkedIn and Facebook and Twitter.
How can it do that?
Zobni says its users say that it makes their inbox work the way their mind does, not the way Microsoft wants your mind to work, for example. Go to this website. There's free downloads. There are explanatory videos.
Is this free? Is this a free thing you can use?
It's a free thing. Zobni. It's a free thing.
Have you used it?
I haven't, but I've had a look at it. It looks interesting.
There are free versions and there are paid versions.
There are premium products as well.
Yeah.
So like everything.
The free versions are there to promote the paid ones, obviously.
Okay.
Have a look. Interesting website. www.zobni.com.
There is a fine line between genius and madness.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Don't ask! For God's sakes, don't ask!
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
A woman who suspected her husband was cheating did some internet sleuth work and discovered her husband had actually gone one step further than expected. She found a Facebook site featuring wedding photos of her husband with another woman.
You're kidding, kidding, aren't you?
She searched for the name of the woman she suspected was his lover, and what she found left her numb with shock. Wedding photos of her husband and the other woman. She said it was like an album of 200 pictures on there, the whole wedding. I was numb with shock, to tell you the truth.
Was this for real, or was they winding her up? Because I could do that with mine. That'd be really funny.
Associated. I might do that
good
with yours.
Joke.
Yes.
But you've got my Facebook page. You could do that for
you don't
me.
Have the, you? You don't have the keys to
That's
your Facebook
right.
account. Associated Press reported that the pictures were taken at Disney World, Florida, and showed the lady's husband dressed as Prince Charming, and his new bride was dressed as Sleeping Beauty, surrounded by footmen.
Yeah,
you read more
children's stories and you'll understand that.
More and more bizarre. The
Cinderella,
the lady, Ms. France, 41, from Cleveland, Ohio, said she'd grown suspicious when her husband began taking more and more business trips. Ladies, beware of your husband taking more and more business trips, but be careful. If you start Facebooking, you might regret what you find.
Indeed. And that is it. That is Tech Talk Radio for this week. I hope you've enjoyed what you've heard. We'll be back the same time next week to do more.
Justin Dunlop should be back next week. He's had some sick children in the family. The panellist formerly known as JD, he'll be back.
He's still around. Yeah. He'll be back.
He'll be back.
He'd be missed. We need some Apple input, don't we? We need to balance.
And Ustream will be back.
Oh, well, all right. Can't have everything, can you?
Can't have everything.
Join us next week. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Justin Dunlop, Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications, podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia that take the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9818 2756 or visit our website techtalkradio.com.au for more information. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.